I think there are less than needed, but please do share a copy. And I'm sorry about that. Okay. So, one of the most important problems of aesthetics is defining, or at least framing, the notion of an artwork. But as a definition of art is difficult to give, there is a tendency to consider this endeavor fruitless and to investigate how artworks represent. This presupposes that there is a unified perceptual mechanism of the kind which enables humans to recognize representations, and also that understanding it would prove beneficial to the aforementioned conceptual framing. This kind of endeavor seems to be a dead-end road, at least for two reasons. First, the basic assumption that there exists a single perceptual mechanism is controversial, as it does not take into account the obvious differences between sense modalities. Second, it is usually considered that in a picture, there is more than meets the eye. So, in order to understand the mechanism of ascribing meaning to an artwork, we not only need a correct theory of representation or depiction, but also to give an intelligible account of what this more might be. It is important to know why, and if possible, how the recognition mechanism functions, and how it enables people to have perceptual reactions to artworks, in order not to think that any attempt of interpreting artworks is useless and impossible. Susan Sontag, for instance, proposed that artworks should be considered as mere independent objects populating the real world. Visual, musical, or literary, they do not need a secondary literature in order that they be understood, because they must not be understood. They should only be looked at, listened to, or read. On this account, the only reaction one should have would belong to the realm of sensations and not of perceptions, considering perception, broadly speaking, to be an interpreted sensation. The authors supporting this theory have the difficult mission of proving that artworks can be conceived as such, independently of the idea of interpretation. If we can interact with the surrounding objects, this means that we use them, and because we know how to use them, we understand them, we can interpret them. If we follow Sontag's proposal and give up their specific way of interpretation, artworks would disappear as artworks. Due to the vagueness of this domain, a solution of this kind seems easy and appealing. But this way, the problems of aesthetics are not solved, only discarded by lack of theorizing. This should be a last resort solution due to its severe consequences. In this paper, I will discuss Walton's proposals of defining representations or depictions on the basis of their function. This definition takes into account both a perceptual background and the idea of interpretation of an artwork as appreciation. By exploring the explanatory value of this definition, I will identify some of its weaker points, and propose as a working hypothesis a related alternative. It seems that the definitions with the most explanatory value are those which relate the definiendum to its function, and also to its users. For instance, a chair is an artifact which serves the function of sitting on. Walton takes as primitive the notion of function for his theory of representation. He suggests that the concept of appreciation should be used in relation to games of make-believe, in which imagination connects the user with the function of representation. On this view, an artwork represents a certain object O if it enjoins its perceivers to pretend or imagine that they see, touch, or hear that object. Appreciating an artwork means participating in a game of this kind. Before proceeding to the analysis of this theory, two clarifications need to be made. First, it is important to notice that any object can be a prop of the imagination in a game of make-believe. The domain of aesthetic appreciation is not restricted to artistic objects. Second, not every game of make-believe is played with the intention of making aesthetical judgments. Children, for instance, often play such games with dolls which are to be regarded as babies. Walton, in his book at page 51, defines representations as being artifacts that have the function of serving as props in games of make-believe of certain kinds, the ones in which they generate certain sorts of fictional truths. This distinguishes accidental props, as natural things may sometimes be, from objects which were designed to fulfill certain purposes. Still, it does not provide us with an individuating criterion for artworks. Dolls and paintings alike have the same function. A clarification regarding the notion of function is now required. Is the function intrinsic to an artwork or representation, or is the function ascribed according to certain criteria more or less explicit? The answers to these questions are difficult to give and do not follow directly from Walton's theory. What is more, it seems that Walton has a contradictory view regarding these problems. Trying to confer objectivity to interpretations, Walton argues that, and I quote, "It can be something's function to serve as a prop, even if it never actually does so, even if the relevant game is never actually played. A painting that is never seen and a forever unread novel will count as representation. Such works are props in game types which, given their functions, they establish, even if the types have no instances or tokens." End of quote. So, if Picasso traveled through time, going back to the epoch of Alexander the Great, he would still be an artist, creating representations, even if no one would recognize them as such, not identifying their specific function. On this view, function is intrinsic to the artwork. A classic epistemic counterargument can be easily applied here. If something has a certain function, independently of there being someone to ascribe that function to the object, or at least to identify it, then how does one know which the correct or true function of that object is? Walton does not answer this question in his book, and only several pages later, he claims that the opposite situation is actually satisfied, namely that functions are society relative. Therefore, due to the changes in the cultural climate, the function of objects can also change. What in ancient Greece was deemed as artwork would stop being one during the Byzantine Empire. In the following discussion, I will try to analyze a possibility of dismissing this sort of questions, proposing that the definition of artwork or representations should be given in connection with their presenting to perceivers a fictional world. If they do so, then they are representations. So the definition will not be connected to the function any longer. Fictional objects are the denizens of fictional worlds, and the perceiver's access to these is enabled by representation. In order to draw a map of the fictional worlds which are specific to a certain artwork, one should analyze the verb to represent. This is needed on the one hand for specifying the distinction, if any, between representations and depictions, and on the other hand for explaining why the artwork's representational or depictional character consists of. Walton argues that an artwork is representational if it has the specific function of being a prop for the imagination in a game of make-believe. Only artworks are created with the specific intention of being used as such, even though other artifacts can be props in games of make-believe. Only on this account can this, Duchamp's fountain, be considered artwork. Without adhering to his intention, that would only be viewed as its relatives are, an object serving for satisfying certain physiological needs. It is not clear whether Walton supports this idea, but it seems he does, because he argues that artists can anticipate the way in which their creations would be used, and thus guide the imaginative actions of appreciators by creating the proper props. Problematic as this view may be, since it is difficult to have access to the artist's intentions, Gregory Curry reinforces the importance of knowing them when interpreting artworks by stating that when an appreciator is presented with a parody or caricature at the level of visual arts, she is not to engage with the apparent features. She has to know that the character is caricaturally portrayed, otherwise she misinterprets that artwork. Here we have to deal with the following problem. How exactly it is possible to identify which games of make-believe are mandated by each artwork? The suggestion seems to be that it is possible to identify the game of make-believe for which a certain artwork is a prop using purely formalist criteria. The artwork's content is the key for the right interpretation. One should not use collateral resources, such as the artist's background or the cultural system of that epoch, for interpreting an artwork. There appears that incorrect interpretations cannot then occur. Everyone could play a correct game of make-believe starting only from that artwork's content. Thus, anyone could interpret any kind of artwork. In the case of a literary work, a minimal precondition should be satisfied, that the perceiver knows the language of that piece. On the other hand, in the case of visual and musical arts, a leveling of interpretation seems possible. One major problem with the formalist approach is that it does not take into account a basic requirement. In order to appreciate, a perceiver should know, in a certain degree, the rules of art. It also seems necessary to know something about the artist's intention. For these reasons, it seems better, I more convenient, to argue that for a right interpretation of an artwork to be obtained, there has to be established a connection between the function of an artifact, knowing the rules of art, and the artist's intention. Going back to the discussion about what the representational character of an artwork consists in, it is obvious that thusly understood, the verb to represent does not have the usual meaning any longer. If one considers the standard meaning of this word, then, in order that an artwork be representational, that image must resemble the represented object. In order that abstract artworks be considered representational, one must not understand representation in terms of resemblance. But an account of realism is still needed in a theory about the foundations of visual arts, and so Walton refers to depictions for complying with this requirement. Defining depictions, Walton follows his previous explanation of representation, considering that, I quote, a depiction is a representation whose function is to serve as a prop in reasonably rich and vivid perceptual games of make-believe. So depiction is a subcategory of representation due to the specific character of the games played. What does rich and vivid bring to the discussion? Can, for instance, artworks, which are depictions, be distinguished from other objects? Are there non-artistic depictions? To answer these questions, we need to go back a little to the point where Walton discussed how non-figurative artworks are representational. They prescribe games of make-believe about themselves, being what Walton calls reflexive representations. They share this quality with some non-artistic representations, such as dolls, for instance. Walton cannot provide sufficient reason for establishing distinctions between dolls and artworks, even when he refers to them as depictions. So why introduce another term if it still does not reasonably distinguish between artworks and other non-artistic artifacts, which have similar functions? I suggest that depiction and representation should be used interchangeably. On Walton's account, there are degrees in which a representation is depictive, i.e. true to life, realistic. This is the direct consequence of introducing the word sufficient in the definition of depiction. What does sufficiently rich and vivid mean? How and who can establish what is sufficient in this respect? These questions are unanswerable. Walton does not provide criteria to distinguish realist artworks. His example can actually be used as a counterexample. He considers that the Cubist painting, Picasso's portrait of Daniel Henry Kahnweiler, is still depictive, i.e. realist, but in a lesser degree than, say, Habermas's Watermill. Usually, Cubism is not considered realistic, but let us agree with Walton that in this painting, the portrait of a man is discernible, and so it does depict, but not as realistically as a realist painting, a man. If this is true, then, in an even lesser degree, Malevich's suprematism is a depiction, depicting abstract objects. This seems too much, even for one who agreed that suprematism is representational, being a sort of reflexive representation. So how is this situation explainable? So a slightly different theory is required in order that these problems be eliminated. I suggest that it is more plausible to think of an artwork as representational if it gives access to one of the fictional worlds it contains, and not if it was created for the purpose of being a prop in a make-believe game. This way, a yet more controversial problem is put forward, namely that of the existence of fictional objects and of the possibility of meaningfully talking about them. A solution to this problem would be a hybrid one, shifting Walton's theory of representation in order to accommodate some of Goodman's ideas. I quote from Goodman, "A picture that represents, like a passage that describes, an object refers to and more particularly have the usual, and more particularly denotes it. If the relation between a picture and what it represents is thus assimilated to the relation between a predicate and what it applies to, we must examine the characteristics of representation as a special kind of denotation." This explicates what it means to say that an artwork gives access to a fictional world represented by that artwork. But the aforementioned problem persists. What does an artwork which presents purely fictional objects denote? A purely fictional object is one which does not have a referent in the actual world, for instance, Pegasus, unicorns, centaurs, etc. Goodman argues that purely fictional objects do not exist. How should we then deal with images in which unicorns appear? Goodman's answer is that an image should denote a unicorn in order that it represent it, but it does not have to denote anything in order that it should be a unicorn picture. The image is a way of presenting a concept without necessarily denoting a corresponding object or other than that particular image. From this, the reflexibility of the abstract paintings, for instance. In this sense, an image or an artwork of another kind is the representation of a fictional world which is contained by it. Walton's theory is somehow accommodated by this view. Depiction can still be considered a subcategory of representation because depiction deals with actual objects, whereas representation with fictional objects in general. But why should one still use depiction differently from representation? Actual objects are fictional objects, and if representation can be extended to integrate non-figurative artworks, why cannot depiction be thusly extended? The latter can actually be extended, and so every artwork would be depictive. A non-figurative one will depict the denizens of fictional worlds. Actually, this is also the case with Waltonian depictions. It would be counterintuitive to say that an artwork depicts the actual world, and on insisting on the fictionality of the worlds of the artworks, Walton does not support this view either. Because if in a landscape there appears an extra tree, for instance, one that was non-existing in the actual scene that was the artist's model, then the painting is no longer a portrayal of the actual scene, but of a fictional one. It is true that perceivers are used to create games of make-believe, starting from fictional worlds, which seem to be very alike with the one which they consider to be the actual, or in my view, to access fictional worlds with actual resembling objects. This only means that the figurative plays an essential part in these kind of games, but it is not a necessary requirement with regards to games of make-believe. For as long as the laws of logic are not transgressed by trying to realize a contradictory fictional world, then anything is possible, a fictional world being a possible one. It seems problematic to identify exactly which fictional worlds one is given access to through an abstract artwork. Walton's suggestion is that an abstract painting mandates imaginative actions about the artwork itself as it is, for instance, the case of suprematism, in which the geometrical forms are thus positioned that they seem to be in different planes. The red square seems to be in front of the blue one here, or the blue rectangle. leading the perceiver to play a game of make-believe in which a surface is endowed with three-dimensional valences. A related discussion can be found in Maynard in an unpublished manuscript yet. Referring to a Renaissance decorated architecture, he states that, and I quote, "We are mandated not only to imagine seeing the scenes within them in the frescoes, but also to imagine something of the physical surfaces on which they lie, then of the architecture of which these surfaces are parts. Often, therefore, we are to imagine the building itself to be somewhat other than it is." End of quote. Maynard adheres to Walton's definition of depictions and tries to clarify it. A few pages later, he continues, "Pictures," and I quote, "pictures in linear perspective may or may not appear behind the surfaces that bear them, may or may not appear in any depth relationship to those surfaces. Furthermore, often when they do appear in such spatial relationships to their grounds, we are meant to imagine that. Then the grounds become depicted also. That is, we are invited to imagine about it." Notably, these observations are relevant to suprematism as well, where a play of planes was what Walton argued that one imagined. So if decorative features of certain depictions are themselves depictive, something of the reverse situations applies to non-figurative artworks. Their decorative features, the only features they present, can be said to be depictive because they mandate games of make-believe of a very low richness and vivacity. So non-figurative artworks are depictions, and on my slightly different definition of representation or depiction, they depict certain abstract fictional worlds, comprising only specific plane relations, as it is the case with suprematism. These are the reasons for claiming that no conceptual distinction between representation and depiction is needed. Their meaning is interchangeable. In this paper, I have tried to give an account of what it means to define an artwork in relation to the notion of appreciation. At the basis of my argument lies the idea that an artwork needs a proper interpretation, which should enable one to consider it relevant or not to one's system of perceptions, beliefs, desires, and finally, knowledge. I have tried to underline the importance of correctly interpreting an artwork, and how this task seems easier to explain on this perceptual approach. After dealing with the key role of interpretation, I have analyzed the conceptual framework proposed by Walton for giving an account of how to interpret an artwork. If my analysis is correct, then Walton's project should be modified in order that the inherent contradictions and vagueness should not interfere with interpreting an artwork. This is why I try to give arguments for dealing with another concept of representation equivalent to depiction. It should be considered that an artwork is representational, which is identical with depictive, in that it gives access to a fictional world by means of imagination, and not solely in that it is its function to be a prop of imagination in a game of make-believe. Feel free to ask me any questions. Somewhere, just to hear better. Yep. A fictional world of the art piece, or yeah, and so.